Well, welcome back to another episode of Hawk Off the Press. I'm Madison Hritzik. I am the Gazette's Iowa football beat writer. And this week we have a very special guest. We are joined by Big Ten Network broadcaster and former Hawkeye, Anthony Herron. There's a lot that's happened throughout the football season, including a massive record that Anthony got an opportunity to call the game for. And that is Kirk Ferentz becoming the winningest Big Ten head coach in all of that. History beating Woody Hayes. He tied that at the season opener, and Anthony now gets to join us to talk about that experience and also just being a Hawkeye. So Anthony, welcome to the podcast and thank you so much for joining.
Madison, I appreciate the invitation. I always love talking about the Hawks.
So you were telling me that you get an opportunity to go back to Iowa City to call games maybe once or twice every year. So did you get to pick the game against UMass last week, or was that one that was given to you? How did you end up getting the lucky game?
The process usually for me just works out where the Big Ten network and the variety of networks with the Big Ten partnerships, the announcers will find out about roughly the first month of our schedule, the initial weeks of the season, because the majority of that inventory is non-conference games. And so between the Big Ten's partnerships with Fox and NBC and CBS and of course the Big Ten Network, then they'll sort of, the networks will do their horse trading for which games, which one is selecting and those types of things. And BTN, they'll try to go about the business of getting me on at least one Iowa game early. And then from there, it just sort of depends after we get into the conference schedule. It'll just sort of depend, you know, how the draft works out with each individual weekend with the different network partners. So they'll usually get one for me early in the year. I just end up feeling fortunate when I get one, but it's up to my bosses at the network to let me know which one I'm going to have.
So it was a little bit of luck that you ended up getting the record breaking call then in that case. So did you kind of have that, like, were you fingers crossed? Like, okay, maybe I can get this one, or maybe I can get the one that he'll tie the record in or anything like that?
Well, I mean, to have the opener against Albany, then that certainly would have been the one where he tied the record, but then a different network partner had that game. And then, you know, they ended up doing Big Noon Kickoff for the Cy-Hawk game with Iowa State. And, you know, I've played the Cyclones as I wore the black and gold, faced them in the past, and I know what that rivalry means. So if he would have broken the record with a victory over Iowa State, I certainly wouldn't have been disappointed about that. But when the opportunity was there and the result went final against the Cyclones, I definitely went to work immediately with the Big Ten Network just to try and figure out how do we make this opportunity for the Big Ten Network as special as we can, and for Iowa viewers who watch so much Hawkeye programming on BTN over the years, how do we make sure we're doing justice to this game? And so as soon as we knew that record-breaking opportunity was going to be there for us and I was going to be on the call for it, then we started having conversations about basically how do we personalize it a little bit more than we would normally personalize a broadcast that I'm on.
Yeah, because typically, and this is something I noticed almost immediately, was when you have a post-game interview, normally it's the sideline reporter that goes in. In this case, it was Danny that was there, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But you had the opportunity, you were able to leave the booth with enough time to come downstairs and do the interview yourself. Was that something that you had pitched? Was that something a producer pitched to you? How did you guys end up working it out so that you would have the opportunity to be the first one to talk to Ferentz after the game?
We really just started to sort of spitball various ideas for how we could take advantage of the fact that, of course, I played for Kirk Ferentz and I was a player for him through his first few wins. I was a junior during his very first season in 99, and we won one game that year, his very first victory. And then in my senior year, we got a few more wins at that point. But to personalize it in a few different ways, just sort of how to go about that using my knowledge of the program, my relationship with Kirk, and just make sure that the information is as buttoned up as possible, but then also that we're doing justice to the history that's being set and sort of his impact on Hawkeye athletics and his relationship with Coach Fry, who I played for my first 2 years there. So we immediately started having those conversations. The game I had the week before was in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I had the same producer for the Nebraska broadcast that I did for the Iowa game the following week. And we were literally there because it was a night game in Nebraska also. So we already knew the result of the Iowa State game. So my producer, myself, my broadcast partner, Mark Followill, we all just sort of sat there even after the Nebraska game and said, all right, this is likely to be something pretty cool in Iowa next week to have this opportunity to witness history and sort of tell those stories. So we were all sitting there outside the production truck even after the Nebraska game, just starting to sort of go through some possibilities for how do we enhance the broadcast in certain ways. So things like me voicing the opening tease that we ran on television leading into the broadcast, and we ran it on social media beforehand as well, just through the Big Ten Network accounts, just with me having basically about a minute to sort of get everyone ready for the game, and sort of we did it as sort of a letter to Kirk from me, basically. So doing that was one idea that we talked about that we ended up sort of that came to fruition, basically, with me writing that and voicing that, and that came together really nicely with some of the images and the music they used for that, and some of the storylines during the game. And then, as you referenced, the post-game interview that would normally be done by, in this case, Danny Rogers or whoever the sideline reporter is, once they mentioned the possibility of being able to get me down there late in the game. And we don't normally have a rooting interest, but from a TV perspective, we usually have some idea of what opponents might be a bit overmatched. UMass is struggling as a program. So essentially, the way we discussed it was if it is a game that Iowa has pretty well in hand by then let's consider this option to be able to capture that and have it be something that we would keep secret from Kirk. We wouldn't let a lot of folks know about it, and to get me down the field for it. And when they mentioned that to me as a possibility, because it hadn't even occurred to me as something that would be likely, that would be plausible to do. I've done sidelines myself before in the past, but I've never, as I've been a booth analyst, gotten down to the field for a post-game interview before. And once the idea was floated, I said, yeah, if we can make it happen, I'm all for it. And it somehow got pulled off. There was a lot of work that went into it beforehand to make sure everything was tightened up to be able to make it happen. And I'm really pleased they did, because it was a special thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember last year before coming to Iowa, I was a color commentator and a sideline reporter for a hockey team. So I would have to leave the booth early with like 3 minutes left in a period and run across the rink to get downstairs. So, but I understand how complex the logistics are. And when you know the layout of Kinnick Stadium too, it's not easy to necessarily get straight down to the field from the press box. So it definitely takes a lot of planning ahead of time, but I think it's so cool that it was, a complete surprise to everybody. From my understanding, nobody in the general media knew ahead of time. I certainly did, and I had come down to the field and was trying to get a video of the Gatorade or Powerade dump on Ference, and then I turn around and I'm like, wait, I was just talking to you up in the booth like 20 minutes ago. So I it was definitely a cool surprise to work on, to be able to pull off like that. But yeah, not an easy logistic thing to do by any
There was
means.
a delicate balance of there were some people who certainly needed to know just to handle the logistics of while we're live on the air and in the fourth quarter of the game and in the latter stages of the fourth quarter, how to very quickly get me from up on the perch in the booth, get me down to the field, get me wired up and in position to catch Kirk as he's getting ready to leave the field. So there were certainly some key personnel who needed to know. And then even just the technological end of how to pull that off, because you've done broadcasts before, Madison, where even having the microphone, which is live throughout the broadcast to the viewers at home. So as we got down there, I got down there by the 2 minute timeout in the fourth quarter. So then I was interacting with Mark Followill in the booth a bit from the field. So initially during that period of time, my mic was live to the TV viewers, but not to the stadium. But then the frequencies they have to be able to use, where they adjust the frequency to make my mic not only live to the television viewers for the post-game interview, but then live over the PA and over the public address in Kinnick Stadium also. So the fans who were there in Kinnick can hear it in real time also. So we were there for an extended period of time on Friday after I finished my production meetings, where myself and Mark and Danny were interviewing Kirk and the coordinators, and I'm hanging out at the facility a little bit, seeing some old friends and everything. Then I went over to Kinnick to do some additional sound checks and audio testing so they could try to figure out the proper frequencies to have my mic live to Chicago, to have my mic live to the production truck that's there, to have it then when they switch the proper channels to have the frequency live in the stadium as well. And frankly, a lot of the echoing that was there, they had to mix the sound correctly to have that at a reasonable level where it wasn't overmodulated, where it wouldn't be off-putting to Kirk, you know, hearing that and being surprised by it in the moment, because that's not normally how a post-game interview would go for him, where his microphone would suddenly be live to the stadium and, you know, just knowing that he wouldn't be expecting that. So a lot of pre-planning went into it.
Yeah, that's so impressive, though, just kind of knowing how all of that is put together. So, I mean, seriously, like that's not an easy task to do. So, like, hats off to the Big Ten Network for putting that together and for you to be able to pull that off. I mean, that's pretty impressive. But, you know, you talk about a lot of broadcasters getting these unique opportunities, and there is, I don't want to say a movement, but there's definitely a trend of a lot of former players that get these opportunities to become broadcasters. And when you got a milestone like this, where, you know, you were one of the first players to play under Ferentz, and now you had the opportunity to be the first person he talked to, what was that full circle moment like for you, knowing that, you know, all of this planning had been done, but at the same time, you're the one person in the room that had that start to finish relationship with Ferentz, that you were going to be able to help, you know, tell not only fans at Kinnick Stadium, but really tell the nation about?
It felt like a big responsibility. And, you know, I feel that to a certain extent whenever I call an Iowa game, because I take my role as a broadcaster very seriously. And I know what a blessing it feels like for me to do a job that I really enjoy doing. But then when I'm on an Iowa game, I feel sort of doubly responsible for not only essentially still representing myself and my alma mater well, but then also to be as even-handed as I can. And if something's going well for Iowa or something's not going well for Iowa, to be, you know, legitimate about my analysis in the moment. But then in a moment like this, where history is being made and it's a coach that I played for, and I know so many teammates of mine are going to be watching and experiencing this, and so many Iowa fans who are passionate about this program are going to look to this and want to watch it and feel in the moment with it. Then, you know, it was really cool that the Big Ten Network wanted to lean into that from the perspective of utilizing me in this enhanced way. And so I wanted to be able to deliver that message and deliver that history associated with it. But it was a bit of a departure for me because I'm there calling a game. And so even things like the script for the opening tease that led us into the game, that brought us on the air, there's elements of that that if I wasn't calling the game, I may have even personalized the script even more. But it's a game that I'm calling where I do want to have an even-handed sort of approach to my commentary about the game. So having me on the broadcast and writing that opening tease that's going to air moments before we come on the live for the broadcast in the stadium, there's a balance there because it is a competition. Yes, it's a competition Iowa was heavily favored in, a game they were expected to control, but still my role as the analyst for that game, I only wanted to lean into my history with Kirk Ferentz and with Iowa football so much, even for writing that script. There was a threshold of how personal I wanted to make that I didn't want to cross. But then once you get to post game, you know, it felt easier in that moment to just completely lean into that. And knowing that, you know, Kirk's a fairly emotional guy, you've probably seen that even a bit in the short time you've gotten to cover Iowa football, that he's very passionate about this program, about his players, about his wife. And those are some of the questions I wanted to be able to give him a chance to address and to talk about post-game also, just knowing some of those things, both in his personal life and his professional life, that are really important to him. And even just in the moments where the clock is striking zero, you know, I've jotted down notes for what questions I want to ask. And I was even trying to decide, do I want to have my phone out so I don't leave out any questions that I want to make sure I get to? And then in the end, I decided to just keep the phone in my pocket and sort of be in the moment with Kirk. And fortunately, my eggs weren't too scrambled where I could remember everything I wanted to get to. But that was a part of my concern, because I definitely wanted to ask him about Mary and about his kids and about Coach Fry and Joe Moore and people who've influenced him over the years. And fortunately, I was able to remember pretty much everything I wanted to get to, but that definitely was a concern of mine because the reason I'm there is because I know Kirk and I know this program, and I wanted to make sure I sort of hit what I felt like were going to be all the right notes to represent that moment.
Yeah, I can totally understand that, especially, when you're trying to write down these questions and you're trying to do a bunch of things at once. It makes a ton of sense to almost be like, okay, did I hit everything? But at the same time, I think when I was watching the interview and even watching it back on Sunday, seeing the players of the current team kind of all stand behind the two of you, you could see them all nodding along and kind of really getting engaged with what you were asking. And I think that it was kind of not only showing a little bit of the full circle moment you had with Ferentz, but it was so unique to watch the connection of this current team with players that have been there for, 4 years, but then also players that, had just gotten there in the summer or the spring, connect with that interview as well, because you could see how excited everybody was for Ferentz. But I wanted to ask, having been there for the very, very early years, you mentioned you guys only won one game, Ferentz's very first season. What do you remember most about those first 2 seasons of Ferentz's coaching career? What stood out to you the most as a moment of, yeah, I might not have had the best end of college career record, but you knew that he had something special that could carry on this long.
His personality is so different from Hayden Fry's personality. And so at the time when the transition was happening, Coach Fry retired. My freshman year was 1997. I ended up playing as a true freshman. I didn't expect that at all. It wasn't as common back in the 90s as it's become now for guys to play right away early in their career. And that wasn't like I was 17 years old when I got to Iowa. So I'm out there at 17 playing Big Ten football against all these mammoth guys with beards and everything. And Coach Fry, his personality, his confidence, his swagger was a part of what infused the confidence in me to be willing to do that when they asked me if I wanted to play right away because they felt like I could handle it. And Kirk's personality, Hayden Fry is this really charismatic guy with all these catchphrases and just sort of lights up a room when he would walk into it. And while, Kirk was on Hayden's staff in the 80s and very much influenced by him, but he's a very different guy. He's much more subdued in his personality, much more monotone in a lot of ways in his delivery. And, there's almost sort of a matter of fact way that he carries himself with, but he just sort of goes about his business day in and day out. So it was, in a lot of ways, a culture shock when Kirk first got there for so many of us who were accustomed to the way Coach Fry operated. Even schematically, there's a big difference on each side of the ball with how we were operating offensively and defensively, with Kirk's approach versus what Coach Fry's approach was. And we had to adjust and we had to prepare for that. But just as we got to know Kirk more and more and got accustomed to how he was operating and the consistency that he handled himself and us with day in and day out, we got a better and better sense for, what the sustainability of his approach could end up being. And it certainly wasn't the first year in 99. I didn't have a sense that maybe history would be possible for Kirk one day then. We were just going about the business trying to figure out why aren't we winning more games? We thought we were still going to be good. The program we were so accustomed to being winners and making bowl games and competing for Big Ten championships when Coach Fry was there. That wasn't the case in 99. As we got into my senior year in 2000, we could tell that the building blocks were starting to lend better results on the field and being more competitive. And Kirk, I think, could tell that we were sort of crossing that threshold also. And he was being even more demanding of us and his expectations. We could tell were ramped up that much more. And then we started to turn a corner later in that season in 2000. But it took a minute. And, like Kirk has referenced multiple times, maybe in modern times here, he wouldn't have been able to be allowed that opportunity to really turn things around because back then, yeah, there was certainly a lot of angst in the fan base where Bob Stoops had immediately become a really prominent head coach at Oklahoma. There was an assumption he was going to be the guy. that got the job and he didn't. Bob Bowlesby hired Kirk instead. So that was the immediate comparison. Stoops took off running at Oklahoma and was immediately in the national championship conversation with the Sooners. That wasn't what we were doing right off the bat at Iowa. It was a slower build for Kirk and the Hawkeyes.
And you have an opportunity to interact with a lot of the current team kind of throughout the prep week leading up to a broadcast and things like that. But you also said like you try to come to Iowa City as much as you can, despite, a relatively busy football season for yourself. But when you get an opportunity to interact with some of the current players, maybe it's in those interviews where you get an opportunity to learn about players you want to talk to, or just when you're getting the opportunity to just go and interact with the team, how have you noticed the character quality of athletes kind of continue the trend that Ferentz has had of demanding a lot of high success from these athletes, but at the same time having like a high character as well? Because Ferentz has talked a lot about recruiting players with not just good football ability, but having the ability to develop as a person as well.
It's always been a really big deal to him, and to have someone with high off the field character, but then also competitively, there's a competitive maturity that he tries to infuse into his players, where guys recognize that there's an expectation for them to show up and do the work on a daily basis. And wait, hold on one second. Throat's really dry coming off the weekend. It was been a lot of talking between Iowa and Chicago and everywhere else. But
Oh, I'm sure.
yeah, there's an expectation that players will show up and do the work on a daily basis. And maybe not everyone expects that of themselves, even when they first get to Iowa and when they first play for Kirk. But how consistently he reminds guys of how those building the fundamentals, building the proper work habits, and sticking to that will have them become a better player, a more competitive individual, a more decisive person, as they grow up and enter different phases of life. Just building that durability that's been sort of the hallmark of Kirk's time as the Iowa coach. He really tries to set that example for players, and he certainly works to recruit guys who are workmanlike in their approach. You certainly got to have the requisite physical tools and that potential that's there. But just as important as anything is, what are you sort of made of? What is your personality? What is in your DNA as a competitor? And he wants to try to draw the best out of you in that regard. And that hallmark has always been there from day one and game one and up until now.
And I'm sure that, this interview that you got to do on the field is probably going to be, a top, not just broadcasting career moment, but just in general moment for you and your relationship with Ferentz. But, beyond that, what are some of the best memories you have as an athlete being coached under Ferentz, or even once you went on to the NFL and began your broadcasting career?
He's so passionate about the guys who've played for him and his willingness to continue to invite guys back and to advise guys over the years about what path they're going to try to take in their career or just where they're at professionally or personally in certain moments. He takes that responsibility really seriously in knowing the way that he can influence young people and wanting to be able to continue influencing them as they get older. And just in seeing one of the ways that he's evolved even in recent years here over the last handful of years, because his personality is such where, and especially in coaching a sport like football, that's so team-centric and the whole has to be in line for the sum of the parts to really be maximized. And so, there was a period there where a lot of players were feeling like there was parts of their personality that they were hoping to be able to show more, and it became a very public thing. And Kirk, to his credit, was willing to evolve and willing to, sort of in some ways step into kind of modern times with how modern athletes are able to navigate both those lanes of being a part of a team, being a part of a whole, while still feeling like they can accentuate who they are and how they operate as individuals. And his willingness to stick to his core principles while still showcasing the ability to evolve in that way, and how he interacts with players and how he allows players to feel like they're really being their full and true selves, that's one of the moments to me that stands out. I mean, I certainly was able to communicate with him during that time, right around 2020 and 2021, as the program was going through, some very public decisions and questions about things. And, just watching someone who'd been in a position of power and influence and had a level of financial stability that pretty frequently someone could just stiff arm any opposition and say, I don't need to change. I've had success doing this exactly the way that I've always done it. And that wasn't Kirk's approach. Kirk said, yeah, I can listen to my current players. I can listen to my past players. I can listen to people around me and see if there are things worthy of adjusting where this will still be my program with my approach, while at the same time, seeing if there's a way where everyone can feel like they've got more of a say in how we do things here. And that was, to me, one of the more impressive things that I've seen in his professional life. Of many things he's done that have been very impressive, that didn't win or lose a game in that 2020, 2021 timeframe, but the way that he very publicly went about the work of listening and talking to people and evolving to whatever extent he was willing to allow the approach to his program evolve. You don't see people in positions of power, especially when they've been there for a long time. Not everyone does that. And frankly, he didn't have to do that, but he chose to. And I respect him so much for how he handled that.
And I think that, kind of shows it the whole like lead by example thing that Ferentz is very often preached as well. But I want to start turning our attention to Big Ten play for this season. You're going to be a very, very busy broadcaster moving forward now, but I'd love to get your perspective on how you think this conference as a whole is going to be looking like this year. I mean, you have a team like Indiana that came off a incredible first season under Craig Signetti that Iowa faces after their opener this Friday. They're going to play, Indiana's playing against Illinois. So that'll be a huge matchup. But, when you look at teams like in Indiana that came onto the scene as aggressively as they did, you have Ohio State trying to return to the national championship again. What do you make of this conference? And what could this conference look like, maybe in the grand scheme of things, not necessarily just specifically Iowa-centric right now?
Well, the Big Ten having claimed the last two football national championships, it's showing the depth and the power of the conference, because while Michigan won it 2 years ago and Ohio State won it last year, and those are two of the historically most preeminent brands in the sport and two of the most successful programs in the history of the sport, and they've always been associated with the Big Ten in their history. But then at the same time, you add in the West Coast teams like Oregon and USC, Washington, UCLA. So it's as deep a Big Ten as we've ever seen. And that played out, especially last season in the expanded playoff, where a team like Indiana, that has never been known for the level of history that Kurt Cignetti had with them in year one, but then he was able to make that happen and do so in such impressive fashion that while the strength of schedule that the Hoosiers took down in their wins wasn't necessarily, viewed as amongst the best in the country, amongst the most impressive resumes because of their non-conference. But then they were able to blow people out in Big Ten play really frequently. And so that dominance is what pushed the Hoosiers into the playoff over teams like Alabama or South Carolina last year. And so with this season now coming off back-to-back national championships for the conference, it seems to me the Big Ten is even deeper this season because there's newness at quarterback for Ohio State. And there's all that talent the Buckeyes lost to the National Football League. And you can say a similar thing about the Oregon Ducks. But they also have Dante Moore, who was sort of waiting in the wings behind Dillon Gabriel and has had his chance to be nurtured in the same offense with Will Stein as his offensive coordinator. And they're a big play defense in Eugene also. So they're a really well-rounded team. But the team in the Big Ten, and probably the team in all of college football that seems as well situated to try and follow the same trajectory that Michigan did a couple of years ago, that Ohio State did last year, is Penn State. Because Penn State retains so much of their talent that could have gone on to the National Football League. And they've got this uber experienced quarterback in Drew Aller, who has them primed and ready. So early in the season, the expectations for Penn State have been super high. They've been dominant in their games, but they haven't necessarily had the big play passing attack that folks were wondering if they'd be able to sort of grow towards. but it's still early. So I anticipate we're going to see more of that from Penn State. But whether or not they have 50-yard touchdown bombs or not, they've got the best duo of running backs in the country. They've got an exceptional offensive line, one of the best defenses in America. They nabbed Ohio State's defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles. So Penn State is going to be right there in the thick of things either way. But if they can truly show themselves as maybe the best team in America, then Drew Aller is going to have to start to hook up for the chunk play with some of his key pass catches. And they haven't necessarily done that yet, but that's sort of the top of the heap in the Big Ten. But you mentioned the game that's coming up this weekend between Illinois and Indiana. I mean, it's been 75 years since they've both been ranked in a game that they've played each other. So we're going to watch some history get made this weekend.
Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting because you're going to look at a matchup that might have implications for Iowa in terms of what the Hoosiers will look like and what they'll bring heading into that matchup next week. But then also when you mention Penn State and Oregon, those are two teams that Iowa has to take on in Kinnick as well later this season in the Big Ten. I'm curious, when you know that the Hawkeyes have a pretty hefty Big Ten schedule, especially at home, how do you think the Hawkeyes can approach it where, they haven't had a ranked win in a while, and it's a team that has the potential to pull off an upset win over a Penn State and an Oregon if they get everything to piece together at the right time. How are you looking at this Iowa team in terms of what they can accomplish just specifically on that Big Ten home schedule right now?
Well, one thing that Kirk Ferentz teams are usually known for is that they tend to get better throughout the season, which is something that, as a blanket statement, we can kind of assume that most teams are able to do. But it's frankly not true of everyone. Sometimes you just get into the flow of a season, and because you're game planning for the next opponent or there's roster attrition, you don't work the fundamentals as much in practice, doing individual drills and things where your players will just get better at the craft of their position because you're so focused on the schematics of that coming opponent. Iowa, frankly, isn't a team that tries to sort of outsmart you on the grease board. They're not drawing up the fanciest schemes in the world at all times, but they do continue to work the fundamentals. Kirk Ferentz and Phil Parker and now Tim Lester, LeVar Woods, Ferentz and his three coordinators, they constantly make sure that the fundamentals of the individual positions are continued to be maximized throughout the year. So I was going to be a better team in November than they are now. Their offensive line has played really well early in the season, so they match up even on a short week here coming up with Friday night's game against Rutgers. I anticipate that being the Iowa O-line versus the Rutgers D-line advantage Hawkeyes. But areas of growth for Iowa throughout the season, whether it's in the immediate or in the weeks to come. This passing attack for Iowa, Mark Gronowski, he's got to continue to show some growth. I was talking about the vertical pass for Penn State. That's where the UMass game, we started to see some indication that the vertical pass was possible for Iowa in a way that it really hasn't taken place in recent years here. I don't know, Tim Lester, and talking to him, he's really excited about what he's beginning to see from Gronowski. But he has a quarterback who didn't participate in the spring, who's new to this offensive system and to this approach. Mark Gronowski was as much of a running quarterback at South Dakota State as he was a passing quarterback. He averaged less than 200 passing yards per game in his time there with all the winning that he did. So there's some growth that seems like it's going to be in position to happen. Kamari Moulton expected back very soon, perhaps even this week at running back. Reese Vanderzee expected back in the weeks to come at receiver. So you have key players at those spots who enhance the playmakers that Gronowski has access to. So I do think that growth from Iowa on offense will be big. And then defensively, we're not seeing a secondary that's taken the ball away yet. And if they continue to rush the quarterback at a higher and higher level on a weekly basis, and that coverage gets stickier on the back end, that's one thing Phil Parker defenses have always been known for, is taking the ball away. So if we see a passing attack with more chunk plays on offense, and we see defense start to take the ball away, then Kinnick is going to be as dangerous as it's ever been.
And you're somebody who really knows this Iowa defense specifically. When you were watching that UMass game, and what did you kind of make of this secondary? Because yes, they haven't produced any sort of turnover yet, whether that be a strip sack or an interception or a pick six. And particularly the pick six, that is something that Hawkeye defense is known for. I mean, their nickname is the Ball Hawks for a reason. And so I'm curious, is that something that you see as a concern? Is that something that you see as, the time will come when the play is just there for the opportunity to be taken? How have you kind of seen that kind of be a little bit of a talked about issue right now? But from just your perspective, knowing this program, and then also just kind of having that broader perspective too.
I'd say it's fair, and that's worthy of concern for right now because of how much that's meant to Kirk Ferentz's best seasons over the years. His defense taking the ball away has been a big part of that. And Phil Parker, he's exceptional in coaching that up. And if some of it is in man concepts where the defensive backs are running with receivers and their back is to the football, but some of it is zone concepts as well, where you have eyes on the quarterback and eyes on the route combinations in your coverage. And that's where that blend of man and zone, where you get a better and better feel for what your players execute best. And there's experience in this secondary to the extent that now I think Phil Parker's got a really good feel for what these guys do best. And certain matchups will indicate that you'll see more zone than man concepts, but he likes to blend each of them in there. But to get to the point where, a guy like Cooper DeJean, who was so known for his ball skills and his anticipation up to this point, there's not someone who's shown themselves in that regard, but that's where the swarm and attack of the Iowa defense has to show up. Because when you deflect a pass, maybe it bats down onto the ground, and that's a nice play. But if you can deflect it up into the air, and then you have some linebacker who's hustling and gets over there for a key interception, or one of the other defensive backs is able to swarm to the football because you get population there where multiple guys have a chance at making that play. That's where, even if it's not one individual who's this exceptional playmaker on his own right, but the group, the whole of that Iowa defense, just with the hustle to the football, can still get you to a point where you're poking the ball away, stripping it out, or where these deflections can turn into interceptions off of batted balls up into the air.
Yeah, for sure. And I can definitely see where, something like a swarm or just populating in general a po spot will be a key element to creating those kinds of turnovers. And I've noticed a lot of Iowa's opponents have really gone out for, a wide out or an explosive play, or try to go for a run game where it's a little bit harder to get a tipped ball, at least initially so far. Maybe that changes as we kind of see Big Ten play evolve here. But I'm curious, starting with this Rutgers game on Friday night, where do you think Iowa's ceiling is in Big Ten play? How can they improve so that they have the ability to ha be in the conversation of one of the better teams in this conference this season?
This matchup with Rutgers is interesting to me because if we would have thought about this matchup back in the offseason or perhaps a year ago, because Greg Schiano is a coach of very similar sensibilities to Kirk Ferentz. He historically has been a guy that really leans into his ground attack, that plays great defense, and really values special teams. And those are all very similar principles to what we've seen lead Kirk Ferentz to success over the years. But this particular version of Rutgers actually hasn't been dominant on defense. They've leaned more into their passing attack. They've got a quarterback in Ethan Kaliak-Manis who's playing the best football he's ever played. He was in the transfer portal a couple of years ago, transferred from Minnesota to Rutgers. And so he's a multi-year starter for the Scarlet Knights now. And he's in an offensive system that he knows well with a team who really knows what he executes best. And he's playing quarterback as well as anyone in the country so far this season, one of the leading passers in the Big Ten. And that's just not a category we normally put a Rutgers quarterback or Rutgers offense in. They've been exceptional in airing the ball out. Their defense has been more susceptible than we're accustomed to. And for Iowa, their run game and their offensive line has been really great so far this season, both the traditional run game with the tailback and the QB run game. So that matchup really stands out to me. I think there's going to be more points scored in this game than we would have thought a few months ago.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Because normally Iowa hasn't allowed more than 20 points from any opponent this season. So it's interesting to see kind of how it might be a little bit more of an offensive game where it might be something where this is the first game Iowa allows more than 20 points. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. I think it's just the nature of what this matchup could present.
And the emotional toll, frankly, of having a short week, a Saturday night game going into a Friday game, and I'll hand up. I'll take some of the blame for the emotions of Saturday night. So to recover from that quickly and get back to work and preparing for the first Big Ten contest of the season, it's not an easy thing to do with one less day, and especially coming off a night game on Saturday. So that'll be a task as they get ready to head to Piscataway.
Yeah, and if I remember, I was talking to some of the players earlier this week, and they said, yeah, the 24-hour rule that they have as a program kind of was shortened to more of like a 12-hour rule between. It basically was like you got a good night's sleep, and because it's a Friday night game instead of a Saturday, you got one less day to look at film and start prepping. So a lot of them were saying they were watching Rutgers film as early as Saturday Sunday morning, and so. Just making that mental switch, just going from a night of highs like that, when you are watching your head coach make history and you are getting to be a part of that celebration, to kind of just saying, okay, I'm gonna go to bed and we're just gonna clear this from our mind. Like that alone is a lot for anybody. I mean, I'll give credit to anybody that's able to make that kind of adjustment, especially a team where you're transitioning from history and the end of non-conference play to, okay, yeah, let's have a Friday night game on a short with a short week. And also, it's the start of Big Ten play. Like, there's a lot of elements too, and so I can understand where that definitely comes into the picture here. But I think the last thing I wanted to ask you, Anthony, is when you look at Iowa as a program, how it's developed, both from when you were a player to now getting the opportunity to travel across the country with these Big Ten schools, how have you seen this program continue to have the defensive consistency, continue to evolve? Through just the modern age of college football, and having a head coach as long as Coach Ferentz has been around is pretty unheard of, and probably won't necessarily be a common thing moving forward. But how have you kind of seen the balance of a consistency in a program, but also just the evolution of modern football really kind of taking shape in this day and age?
Continuity has been such an advantage for Iowa over the years. You think about the my first coach when I got there, Hayden Fry, who we were talking about earlier. He took the program over in 1979 and then was there for 20 years. And then Kirk Ferentz gets there in 1999, and he's been there now in season 27. And you obviously have to win when you're going to allow a coach to stick around as long as each of these men got to stick around. But having an administration in place with an approach to valuing people and valuing consistency and sustainability, that's a part of where so many athletic programs at Iowa have been able to sustain success, because it's an athletic department that hasn't looked to cycle through coaches that quickly, unless some other kind of hiccup, has occurred. So for Hawkeye football to have had two coaches over the last almost 50 years at this point, it's something that I don't know that we'll ever see again in modern times, but it's certainly a big factor, a key factor in the success that's been able to be sustained with Hawkeye football over the years. So I respect that about the approach that the program has taken. We wear the same black and gold that the Pittsburgh Steelers do, and there's certainly some similar principles between that organization and the NFL and the success that they've sustained, the continuity that they've had in place with only a few head coaches over generations of football fans. So respect that. But Hawkeye fans are obviously a huge part of that as well. And my wife and I, we travel the world with our son, and pretty much everywhere we go, we have our Hawkeye gear on. We're going to see some Iowa fans somewhere, someone wearing the Tiger Hawk logo and, shouting Go Hawks to us, or we'll shout Go Hawks to them. And, it's a fan base that is passionate, that loves its team. And when you have that sort of investment and engagement from the fan base, then that can really carry things quite a long way. And that's been a huge factor for the success that's been sustained for the Hawks.
Yeah, and there's nothing like college sports being able to travel the world and be able to say, hey, go Hawks. Or for me, sometimes
Right.
I'll say go Dukes as a James Madison alum. Or occasionally, I've surprisingly, I've seen a couple Syracuse, couple
okay.
Syracuse jerseys and T-shirts recently, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I didn't expect Upstate New York to make an appearance, but it's fun to be able to kind of have that as well, paint a picture too, because it's just there's nothing like college sports. I really truly believe that. But Anthony, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been such a fun conversation. For fans who want to continue listening to Hawk Off the Press, a new episode comes out every week. You can like and subscribe for more content. And you can also join my weekly newsletter with the same name. It comes out every Friday morning. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode and have a great rest of your week.
Not a Gazette subscriber? There's no better time to support local journalism. View our latest deals for print and digital offerings at thegazette.com/subscribe. Stay informed, be empowered. Subscribe to The Gazette today at thegazette.com/subscribe.